We're going to go ahead and get started. We want to make best advantage of the time that we have left. We have a panel today speaking on how we can best provide care for those in our lives who we love, who we care about, who are a little bit older and who might need a little bit more assistance. We have four panelists. The first is Deborah Flint. She has worked at Pittsburgh Pastoral Institute for a long time. I'm sorry, I have these in the wrong order. Here we go. She serves in the Newcastle and Shadyside offices. She has spent most of her career in geriatric social work and hospice and has had ample opportunity to address the psychosocial spiritual needs of the caregiver. She currently leads a retreat ministry called The Quiet, where she provides hospitality for inner healing. Deanna has a master's in counseling psychology. She works for the LIFE program, she is a care coach for the United Way grant funding program, the Family Links Caregivers First Initiative. This innovative six-month program uses the evidence-based Reach 2 model to support family caregivers of older adults in Allegheny County. It is free for participants and provides one-on-one guidance and practical problem-solving, self-care, stress management, and emotional support. Karen Schaefer is the owner of Age and Dignity. She's a senior care consultant. She guides families along the best long-term care solutions for their loved ones in Western Pennsylvania. Karen has been in the senior housing industry since 2007 and began Age and Dignity in 2010. She's a graduate of Geneva College with a BS in Community Ministry and is pursuing a master's in gerontology as well. Jean Colby has a master's degree in clinical social work and is a licensed clinical social worker. Jean completed a postgraduate certificate program in family therapy, an additional certificate program in emotionally focused therapy for couples, and a certificate program in spiritual formation at Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. Her primary work focus is as a therapist, integrating the resources of faith and therapy. With regard to working with the geriatric population, Jean has provided service as a geriatric care manager in Pittsburgh for over 20 years and also worked in hospice as a bereavement specialist. So we're going to start with a few questions, and then we'll open it up to questions that you might have. Deborah, you worked with LIFE, an organization that seeks to provide the resources to keep elderly people in their homes. What are some of the key factors in whether or not a person can stay in their home?
I think families and older adults need three things. They need resources, they need reality, and they need to be remembered. The resources that they need and need to have access to are good housing, affordable housing, food, clothing, and I think the big issue for older adults is the issue of loneliness. I guess I wanted to just pose a question to you. What would it look like if your congregation had a ministry where one person or several people were the experts on what's out there for older adults and could do volunteer education and advocacy for people to get food stamps, LIHEAP, rent rebates? There's a nutrition program in the state in the summertime where you get food vouchers for fresh fruits and vegetables at a market stand. And I was talking with the person who runs that program the other day, and she said that most of those go unused. So they get the food stamp, they get the thing, but they can't get to the market stand. So what would it be like if your congregation had a ministry where you took a little bus trip to the market? I think people need resources and they need access to be able to get there, and those are things that congregations can really provide. In order to age in place, I think it's really important for people to know the reality of what's going on with them personally. For instance, it's going to take some adjustment to get old in the place you're in. If your eyes let in one-third of the light that it did when you were 30, then you're going to need more lighting. And most of the older adults I see are working with less lighting, maybe for financial reasons or whatever. What would it be if your congregation had a group of people who twice a year change the batteries and smoke alarms for everyone in your congregation? Those are usually located at the top of the stairs. And on a chair at the top of the stairs is not where I want to see my mother, but that's where she'll go. There's a lot of opportunity to address the needs of older adults and their caregivers.
Thank you so much, Deborah. Diana, can you speak to how we can support caregivers of the elderly specifically?
So that's a really important question, because alone in Allegheny County, caregivers, actually in Pennsylvania, caregivers on average spend about 35 and a half hours for a period of 5 years caring for another family member, which is basically an unpaid full-time job. And a lot of times, caregivers themselves don't have any support. They often get burnt out. And so that's a really important concern that society is just starting to talk about, because we have so many aging adults, and with the baby boomers getting older, they're really going to need caregivers to help them through that time, to take care of them. And so some of the most important things that we can do in this room to help support caregivers is, first of all, help them realize that they are caregivers. A lot of caregivers don't realize that they fall in that category. They don't realize that the things that they are doing really fall under caregiving. So, you know, getting groceries for their loved one, getting the medications taken care of for their loved one, taking them to their doctor's appointments. People think, hey, I'm just taking care of my friend, or that's what you do for family. And that's true. A lot of us, you know, we feel like that's what we should be doing. But helping them realize that they are caregivers, that they also need support for themselves, that's one of the most important things that we can do to support them. Another thing that we can do is try and help them connect to other resources. The Area Agency on Aging in Allegheny County is very underused. About 17% of total number of caregivers actually have called the Area Agency on Aging and gotten support from them, which is kind of sad. So really trying to learn what other resources are out there, and through conferences like this, this is a really good opportunity to find what other programs are out there for them. And the third thing that I would say is really important to do is ask caregivers how they're doing. See about doing things to actually help them, practical things. So many caregivers hear, hey, how's your mom doing? Or how's your dad doing? I heard he was in the hospital. And it's important to ask those questions. But it's also important to ask the caregiver, how are you doing? Because a lot of times people don't. And they also need support to continue what they're doing, because it's easy to get burnt out when you're taking care of mom. You're also working full time. Maybe you have your own kids that you're taking care of. That's a lot. It's a lot for one person to handle. And as a society and with our congregations, we really need to band together and support the caregivers so that they can in turn keep older adults in home and living a happy life.
Deanna's organization, Family Links, provides 6 months of free care for caregivers to connect them to the resources that they need to do it long term and to have the kind of support they need. So she's a great resource for that. Karen, you help families forge a path of care for their beloved older members. When, if ever, do you feel like a person has reached a point where they need the care of a facility?
Oftentimes when families approach me about the care concerns of their loved one, it appears that there are a few different motivating factors that have really kind of brought them to the brink. Mm-hmm. One is incontinence and toileting issues. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes whenever you have a senior who is starting to develop toileting problems and they're trying to navigate their way to the toilet in the middle of the night, there's a potential for falling. Oftentimes if they are also dealing with vision problems in low light scatter rugs on the floor, all of these are potential opportunities to fall. And a lot of times mom or dad is home alone and they're trying to manage this. That seems to be probably one of the biggest factors that would encourage an adult child to move their loved one. The other issue with incontinence is obviously cleanup. If mom or dad lacks bowel control, and as a consequence, there's a lot of accidents, and the bed sheets need to be changed periodically, that can be quite a difficult task to manage. And the fact is that sometimes it's quite inappropriate if mom has an adult son who is providing the care. You know, unfortunately, there are boundaries that probably shouldn't be crossed, and maybe that adult son should not be providing personal care mm-hmm. to the mother for cleanup. Mm-hmm. The other motivating factor is wandering. Mm-hmm. So many of our seniors who suffer from memory impairment are confused. And about 68%, according to the Alzheimer's Association, do at some point or another have a tendency to wander. Why they wander is they are looking for something familiar because the surroundings that they are in are now unfamiliar territory. So when you feel as though that you have to always have eyes behind your head and you have to constantly be vigilant with your mom or dad, if you are getting messages from your neighbors that mom is, you know, confused and she's going to your door instead of her front door. Yesterday I had a client whose sister is 91 years old and she walks a mile and a half to Giant Eagle, and then she accepts rides home from strangers. And so she is no longer safe to remain at home, and the social workers at the hospital have determined that. Mm-hmm. So I would have to say that that probably is another reason. I do oftentimes talk to families who are very, find it difficult to manage their loved one at home if it is, if they're having a hard time managing their own schedule. If they're getting calls from mom at 2 in the morning, it's very disruptive to their sleep. Then there's the possibility that they could lose their job because they are always having to intercede and go over to mom's house. Perhaps mom is scared. She has her nights mixed up with her days, or she's paranoid and she's seeing things, and the daughter or the son has to intervene and say, "No, mom, everything's okay." I find that most families, when they reach that point, they recognize the fact that it's the most appropriate choice to find a 24/7 type of long-term care facility, perhaps a memory unit that is that can manage behaviors mm-hmm. and such.
Yeah, thank you so much. Jean, you have experience with a variety of different types of care for the elderly, but specifically I think you bring something unique to the panel, which is experience with hospice and hospice care. Can you tell us a little bit about what hospice is, when it might be helpful, and some common misconceptions related to hospice?
You'll have to pardon my voice because I came down with a cold here. But yeah, hospice is a great resource for your loved ones. If you're not familiar with it, it tends to be underutilized. The hospice benefit is one that you can initiate a request for an assessment as a family or a friend. You can ask your physician, you can check with, there's many hospices around Pittsburgh. There's for-profit and non-profit hospice. You check with your own physician or hospital about which ones are in your area. That's helpful. But the word hospice comes from the root word of hospitality. The word hospice got associated with this being a place for people to be cared for. Like in the Middle Ages, that was the word they used for places travelers stopped on their pilgrimage, with a hospice. So that's how this word got applied to this. A woman who started hospice back in 1948 in England, and then it came to the States in the 60s. So hospice is not so much a place, but it is a way of caring. It is a concept of caring. So hospice is a team. It's always made up of a physician, nurse, home health aide, social worker, and a spiritual care person. My role when I was on, I worked for two different hospices, and one role was the social worker, the other was the bereavement counselor. So the idea with the team approach is that they assess your loved one and try to come up with a plan of care and see if they're appropriate. If a physician believes that your loved one is within 6 months of death, then you can be on that benefit. If they don't decline as quickly as anticipated, they can be recertified. So there are some people who are on hospice for more than a year. Unfortunately, the average for people is only beyond a few weeks. And you as a family or your church parishioners miss a lot if you don't start the process early. So I'll just give a personal example of that. My father-in-law just passed last month. But because I'm familiar with the program, as I saw him starting to decline last summer, I said we should have him assessed for hospice and find out which hospice serves this facility. And he had moved into an assisted living facility because of a broken hip. So they were able to start with him, but then as he declined, they can increase their services. So they may only come a little bit at the beginning, but then towards the end, they're there twice a day. So it's a team of people who will come either to your home or to an assisted living or to a nursing home. So if you've got a loved one in an assisted living or a nursing home, you'd think, well, why bother? Is that just the system getting more money? But it adds a whole layer of care for your loved one, a whole another team, a whole other set of eyes. So it's the concept of keeping people comfortable and pain-free and living fully each day. It's not about rationing care. That's one of the myths out there that people think it's to save money, but it really is a blessing. The other piece that I would mention in there is palliative care is a term you should know. Palliative is different from hospice because palliative can be anywhere along an illness continuum and they do not have to be dying. Palliative consult might be somebody with a chronic illness and you're trying to figure out what's the best treatment? It might not be curative, but it was something that would be bringing relief. It helps you navigate between the let's do everything we can and let's do nothing. It's helping you figure that out. So that's another thing you can ask for if you've got somebody in your church or in your family who's in the hospital or has a chronic illness. You can ask for a palliative consult.
Thank you. Thank you, Jean. That's very helpful. So some of the major challenges faced by the elderly were discussed by a developmental theorist named Eric Erickson. He talked about generativity versus stagnation, which has to do with people whether people have productive and purposeful activity and feel like they see value in the way they live out their lives. And he talked about ego integrity versus despair. Would any of you be interested in commenting on those two phases in the aging process and how we can help people find the positive side of that, generativity and ego integrity.
I'll mention the first question about generativity versus stagnation. Most of you don't know that my husband is an Episcopal priest, and the two of us together started an evening prayer service at UPMC at an independent living community about 4.5 years ago. And this community is filled with octogenarians. I believe the average age at the time was about 86 years old. It was a brand new community. The building was built with the intention of attracting 70-year-olds. And to their surprise, most people waited until they were in their 80s before they realized that they wanted to be in some type of a community. When they opened this beautiful community near Pasadena Hospital, my husband and I started a weekly evening prayer service with three participants, and we started on a Tuesday evening. And for a while, we just would occasionally get a new member. But then all of a sudden, we decided that probably what was the most important thing was to make them feel as though that this was their little church. And we assigned roles to them. And we had participants hand out booklets, like a regular church. They became ushers. We had one particular gentleman read the psalm every week. We assigned colics to a number of the participants, and the group started to thrive. And 4.5 years later, we have approximately 35 to 40 participants every week. They call it their church, even though plenty of them do go to church on Sunday. And we also show up every holiday, Easter, Thanksgiving, and Christmas, and have a service for them. One particular woman that I can recall when she first came to the community seemed very confused. It seemed to me that she had some cognitive deficits. She seemed to almost be somewhat, I don't want to say shunned by the other members, but it appeared that they didn't really want to sit with her. She was kind of loud and kind of awkward. But we discovered that she wanted to take care of our altar. And all of a sudden, she blossomed. She started buying candles for the altar. She has to put the crucifix, because she's a Roman Catholic, she called it the crucifix. She had to put the crucifix on the lectern every week. Then all of a sudden, she developed leadership skills in that group. She is pretty much runs the show. We have seen this woman blossom over the past 3 years since she's been there.
That's a beautiful story, Karen. Would anyone else like to comment on generativity versus despair, versus stagnation, or ego integrity versus despair?
I can also speak on generativity versus stagnation. I think Karen, you were talking about, you know, a similar thing, reciprocal care. Well, I'm going to talk about the caregiving aspect because that's my specialty, but one thing that's important for us is reciprocal caregiving. So a lot of times caregivers will try and do everything for their loved one. They feel like, you know, they want to make them as comfortable. They don't really want to push them too far. You know, they don't want to ask them to do any kind of, you know, household duties, or, you know, they just want them to kind of stay healthy, that's your job. So that's one thing that we work with caregivers on, is teaching them that older adults are able to do a lot of things for themselves, but sometimes they're not given the opportunity to show that. I think that's something that you've touched on, that if given the opportunity, you can see, you know, miraculous things happen. And so we talk a lot with caregivers about giving them opportunities to show that they still can do things, whether it's helping to fold laundry in the home, giving them tasks to do so that they feel like they're contributing to the household. You know, if you're going out to the store, making it a big thing that you need their help to help you pick out, you know, what kind of groceries to get, planning the meal list for the week, getting them involved in cooking, helping, you know, ask your mom to help your peel potatoes for dinner or something like that, so they feel like they're contributing to the household. They still have a purpose in helping you, and that's a big thing that we can still get a lot of help from older adults, and they do have a lot of purpose. We can get a lot of help from them.
Would someone be able to speak to what ego integrity means, and what's the contrast between ego integrity and despair?
Ego integrity versus despair. As a hospice chaplain, I had, there was nothing sadder than to go into someone's room to pray with them and find that they just, the question they ask themselves all day long is, why am I still here? Why do I bother? I'm just a burden. Nothing that I do matters. I just eat and I move from one place of the facility to another. That kind of despair is, it's just heartbreaking. And there are a lot of folks in nursing facilities who never get relief from that question because they don't have the ability to interact with others in such a way that they could have a distraction from it. That would be my best example of what that's
of the dark side of that. What is the opposite picture?
Ego integrity is having a meaningful thing to do, just like you said. We all, as human beings, need to feel like we're contributing some way and have a purpose. Studies show that people who feel they have a purpose and a meaning recover better from disease. So knowing that you have a specific purpose, like getting the candles for the altar or whatever, there is always something that you can point out. Once they get to despair, it's really difficult to spark that back again. So you're better off starting ahead of the game and being proactive.
Jean, do you have anything you want to add to this discussion?
I think everybody said it pretty well. I mean, it's helping find ways to communicate to people that their life has value. And I think as people of faith, you know, that for me, the core place is, you know, we're created in God's image, that this person, whether they can do not help in any other way or not, they still have value. So I think a lot of it comes down to our how we treat people as another human being. You know, I would say with the sick people, when I was working with hospice, some of the people, their pain was that nobody would talk with them about it, so that they were alone in their dying, and that brought them to that despair. So being open to listening to somebody saying what it's like for them. So just not being afraid to journey with them and to talk with them.
What are holes in care for the elderly in Allegheny County? Where are people falling through the cracks?
One thing that we've found to be difficult, especially with starting a new program like we did and trying to reach out to older adults and their caregivers, a lot of people have trouble accepting help. So, you know, not only finding them, but once you do, convincing them that, you know, pretty much anyone can use support, whether you are an older adult, a caregiver, you know, just someone walking down the street. Anyone can use support, someone, you know, there to talk to them, to help them through difficult times and just, you know, cheer them on during good times. So being able to you know, use resources as well to find people. So, you know, in your congregation, someone that maybe you don't really know that well, get to know them. Find out what their story is, because, you know, I don't know about you guys, but through my job, I've learned a lot of things that about people that I wouldn't have guessed just looking at them. Some really amazing stories, and that's been one of the most rewarding parts of my job, is to hear, you know, what they've been through. And for them to have someone to talk to is, you know, they enjoy it just as much as I do. So, I mean, that's a really good opportunity and way to reach out to people and to try and fill those holes. You know, that would be my best answer for that.
Other thoughts on that question? Where are the holes? Where are people falling through the cracks?
I feel as though, you know, obviously people are always saying that, you know, transportation is a big problem, because when you are removing someone's ability to drive, you need to make sure that you have something else in place. If you're taking something away from our seniors, you need to be able to make sure that you are giving them something in return, because they will remain isolated. Transportation is probably a big thing, but just to kind of get back to what we were saying about accepting help, I think that one of the problems with our society is that we have always heralded how important independence is. And that is the exact opposite message that as Christians that we should be embracing. We should not encourage people to be too proud to accept help. We are to encourage people that humility and asking for assistance is really that's what they should be encouraged to do. One of the big misconceptions, though, that I see oftentimes is that there are some people in the parish that will say that they're exceptionally independent, that they want to remain at home. Oh, I'm so independent. I'm doing fine. But quite frankly, are they really? If you look at it, they may be really relying on a lot of neighbors and a lot of parishioners to provide them with assistance. I think there comes a point where you have to be very careful in your parish that you are making sure that your volunteers are not being used. There are resources out there that are available to people, and I hate to see volunteer burnout with parishioners, and I've seen it happen. I have seen where there have been particular parishioners that will need a ride, and they will continually call other parishioners for help and to schlep them to doctor's appointments and things like that. And there's nothing wrong with it occasionally, but you do not want to see that your parishioners are being relied on continually for that kind of help, where there should be other resources in place that can help them.
Thank you, Karen. That actually segues perfectly into the next question, which, what are some of the major resources available in Allegheny County for the elderly and caregivers of the elderly? Who wants to start? I know you all have worked with them.
I'm not sure. I think it's already been mentioned. Allegheny County Department of Aging would be one of the primary resources for calling, because they can come and do an assessment and figure out whether somebody needs help with caregiving or with cleaning, and they, based on, it's a sliding scale, sometimes there's no cost or very minimal cost. So Department of Aging would be a first place to start. I think our senior centers, we have a lot of good senior centers around Allegheny County, encouraging, a lot of people don't want to go. I don't want to go and play bingo, do whatever, but they can find and form other groups there, because the things that help people the most in terms of keeping their mind and healthy are socialization and exercise. So trying to get places where you can get people to, like a senior center. The other place I would encourage you to get to the exercise piece, if your church has somebody who can lead a gentle exercise program, or get them to join a silver sneaker program. Most of the insurances have free memberships for gyms for seniors that they can go to and go to those kind of programs. I know my mom is 89. Her church offers a gentle yoga for her age group, and Tai Chi, which are great for helping with balance and places. And then like in her situation, finding places where they can help. Okay, she can help at the food pantry, signing people in, and she feels great about that. So those are a couple examples.
Other resources?
There are a few different organizations called Life Pittsburgh, Community Life. They work in particular zip codes, and they are funded by the state, and their intention is to try to keep people at home, just like Family Links, where they will try to implement an adult daycare program along with home care. There is a definitely a push by the state to use medical assistance funds to try to keep residents in their home for as long as possible and to keep them out of nursing homes. And at places like Life Pittsburgh or Community Life, they even have their own doctors. And it's almost like a health insurance for seniors. So it's really a pretty remarkable program.
Yeah, they actually call themselves a nursing home without walls because they do pretty much everything under the sun. It's amazing, and a lot of seniors don't know about these kinds of programs, so one good thing is just trying to find out what the resources are and letting them know. That's a really great program. Another one, if you're just kind of starting out and want to know what all is out there, is PA211, which is run by the United Way, and it's a good number to call if you want to know what kind of home health agencies are out there, or PA211, sorry.
If you just dial 211 on a phone.
Yep,
you
just
get
211.
Yeah.
But they are a really good resource as well as the AAA. For caregivers, there are beginning to be a lot more programs in Allegheny County. We, as Caregivers First, we are one of them. We do the first face-to-face contact. Highmark has a program called Caregiver HQ. You might have started to hear about it out in the media. They offer telephone support for caregivers. And AgeWell has started an online support for caregivers as well. So there are beginning to get more supports for caregivers, which connect them with those resources out in the community so that they can help their loved ones and help the older adults.
The other one for caregivers, just to add on there, is the Ursuline Center, does a lot with the elderly, and they are offering next month in May a one-day workshop for caregivers. I've gone to that before, and it's excellent.
Deborah, I know you've actually worked with Life, so I don't know if you want to comment on that as well as any other.
It is a comprehensive program of care. There are some guidelines that need to be met, and there's an assessment process. But it is a comprehensive care, a doctor's office, the senior center, your medication is handled through them, all of your in-home care, transportation to medical appointments, it's all one big ball. And it helps to streamline what individuals have to do to manage their doctor's appointments and a lot of caregiver relief based on caregivers not having to take off time from work to go take somebody to the doctor or to pick up their medications and so on. So it is a comprehensive program that is more the trend in geriatric care than we've seen before. It's called a LIFE program, LIFE, Living Independence for the Elderly. In other states, it's called the PACE program, and if you're familiar with the PACE prescription drug program, you'll know that that acronym was already taken. So in Pennsylvania, they're called LIFE programs. And they are in most counties in Pennsylvania, and they do have specific geographic locations that they must cover, and there is no overlap, so there's no competitor. You don't have to choose between Life Pittsburgh and Life Lawrence.
The 211 number that Deanna was mentioning is actually created by United Way to provide a directory of social services in the area. So really any problem that someone is facing where they need some kind of tangible assistance, you can call 211 and they will give you a list of what's available in your area in that, and to respond to that issue. We are at the end of the questions I have here, so I'm really interested in hearing from you. We have about 10 minutes left. What questions do you have for our panel? Maybe I'll take the mic over.
I talk loud.
Okay.
Based on their conditions, very much are elderly in the sense of care needed. Sometimes we have trouble linking the services because of age. Are there any things out there for folks that are maybe 50, you know, over 50 or 45 and up even? Some of our folks were finding elderly issues health-wise for folks that are younger.
Well, if you're talking about some particular type of a placement into a personal care home, a lot of personal care homes and memory care communities will accept residents who are under the age of 65, especially if there's any type of cognitive impairment. So I tend to find that, you know, obviously someone has to, you have to look at what the affordability, what they can afford, and if they have been impoverished throughout their life, then your choices for personal care homes are rather limited. But I have seen that people with traumatic brain injury or early onset Alzheimer's, you know, as young in their 40s, that have been in memory care communities and personal care homes. So, and there are group homes as well, you know, for some of that. But, you know, so I wouldn't say if they're under 65, there's no options, because I have, you know, found places that will take them. You'll have a few that will just say, oh, they're just not appropriate. We have such a geriatric population. So it's also really what they're aware of, too. You know, if you feel as though that they would really be uncomfortable in such a geriatric population, you may have to search a little farther and wider to find a community that has people who are within the same, you know, demographic age.
Yeah. Okay. Other questions? Yes.
Yeah, all the life programs are built on the same model, just implemented in a different place by a different organization.
So the comment was that in some parts of the county it's called just life, and in some parts it's senior life. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Other questions? In the back, yeah. So addiction resources for the elderly is the question.
Elderly who can't get out.
Homebound elderly, especially if there's an addiction issue.
We at Family Links actually, in conjunction with the United Way, just started up another program called the Mobile Mental Health Treatment Program. And so it's pretty new. We have brochures out there, but it's for older adults who, for some reason or another, can't get out to treatment. So we have therapists that come into the home to work with them. You know, some people physically can't get out to a clinic, or some people, you know, let's say they also have anxiety about driving or being out with other people. You know, all those reasons, you know, that prevent them from getting out would be a good reason to try and get some kind of form of mobile mental health treatment in the home. So there are beginning to be a few more programs like that in Allegheny County. I'm not sure of others at this moment, but I'm sure that other programs are coming up with that as well.
Other questions?
How do you encourage someone who might be in denial about their mental state to seek help?
The question was, how do you encourage someone who might be in denial about their mental state to seek help? Really good question.
You know, one of the beauties of living in the United States is that we have the freedom to folly. We can make a lot of stupid decisions if we're alert and oriented, and we can do whatever we want. And that bites us in the butt when we get older, because we think we know what we want, but our memory impairment or mental health issues complicate that, and then families are running ragged trying to catch up and clean up. There's not a whole lot that can persuade somebody who refuses care to accept care. That is their choice and their right. There's a lot of urging and pushing by family members, but ultimately, if the person says no, it's no.
Jean has a further comment on that.
Yeah, I agree with what Deborah's saying there. You can't push somebody to go, but there is an approach in counseling called motivational interviewing, where you try to really reflect back what that person is saying. So it makes sense to you that you don't want to deal with this, that you want to stay home because this, and you kind of almost over-exaggerate it so that you're trying to say what you think they're saying, and then they can maybe push back and take the other side a little bit. So sometimes it's almost like looking at the pros and cons. Well, what are the advantages to you of not getting help? And what are the possible costs to you of getting help? And what are the disadvantages of staying in your situation? And then what are the advantages of getting out of the situation? Now, and I would say if it's an elderly person, I'm a Medicare provider as a therapist. There aren't a ton of us out there. But something like I have an older senior I'm working with right now who's been very limited, who has been afraid to go out of the house because she's afraid of having a bowel accident because she had one. So trying to work with her about what's the gain to her, and there's things she would like to do. And so if you can try to help them see, what would you hope to gain from it? You know, they're not going to do intense therapy at that point, right?
Pittsburgh Pastoral Institute, where both Deborah and Jean work, has a variety of Medicare providers all over Allegheny County and offices all over Allegheny County. So that's a resource if you think that as a family it would be helpful to sit down with someone to talk through some of these things, or if your loved one would like that. Or as a caregiver, if you would like that. Yeah. Other questions? So to repeat the question, do you work with a lot of cases of elder abuse? And if we suspect elder abuse is occurring, what should we do?
I come into the home, so sometimes it's easier to have those suspicions than if someone is coming to you in a facility. A lot of times you have that question, you have that suspicion. Any kind of suspicion where you think someone is being abused or neglected, it's a reason to call Senior Line, and it's the same if there's suspicion of child abuse or neglect. You don't want to miss an opportunity to help someone that's in a situation where they can't help themselves. So, you know, I've had to call Childline before, I've had to call Seniorline before. And it's not a fun experience, but at the end of the day, you know that what you did was right, because even if it's unfounded, you know, at least it's been looked into. You know, you've taken the steps to do what's in your power to help that elderly person, or, you know, whatever the age or population.
Let me briefly give you the Senior Line number. It's 1-800-344-4319. Again, 1-800-344-4319.
If the individual is at home in the community, calling that number. Also, if they're in a facility and you suspect abuse, there is a statewide program called the Ombudsman Program, and they will investigate within a facility if there's been neglect or abuse. And we are, as clergy, mandatory reporters, and we must follow up and make sure that that we have done our due diligence in making sure people get the care that they need.
Can you say the name of the program again that investigates in facilities?
It's called an Ombudsman Program.
How do you spell that?
O-M-B-U-D-S-M-A-N.
Okay, thank you. Other thoughts about responding to elder abuse or ways you've seen it in your own practice? No? Other questions? Yeah. What Gus is sharing is a situation where someone who needed treatment for their own mental health issues was not receiving that treatment because they were so concerned about their elderly parent at home, and that really speaks to the dangers of caregivers not receiving the care they need because of the needs of the elderly person. And a lot of Deanna's work has a lot to do with that. Mm-hmm. Deanna does have a table outside, so does Pittsburgh Pastoral Institute, as well as Karen. So you can speak to any of these people right here after the panel or at the tables and get numbers, brochures, resources related to all of that.
There's one thing that I want to be sure we cover. It is the unique role of the church in the life of the older adult, in their relationship with God. I have had numerous unfortunate experiences where I have been at the end of someone's life talking with them about whether God loves them or not because the church abandoned them. And that breaks my heart. As the church, when we allow someone to slip out of our congregation and become isolated at home and we don't visit, they begin to wonder what their relationship with God is. And you are front and center. They're not thinking about God Almighty. They're thinking about the church that they cooked all the dinners for and all the activities they participated in and all the work that they did. And no one cares for me, so God must not care for me. This is also makes a huge impact on caregivers and children in the next generation. I can't tell you the number of people that I've sat with who have said, you know, my mother was always at church, and not one person from that congregation up there came to visit. And it's true. I think that congregations, at the very least, should have some sort of ministry team which takes care of their shut-ins, that brings church out to their homes, because they're not going to get it otherwise, and it is going to make a difference in how they feel about their worth before God as they die.
Any other final thoughts or comments from the panel?
I think you guys have a really unique opportunity, and I think that's what you were talking about as well, that, I mean, you guys have the opportunity to reach out to so many individuals who might not otherwise be able to get that support that they need, to be there for them, to connect them with other resources, and, you know, kind of, like you said, bring the church to them. And, you know, the church is typically an extended part of an individual's family. So, you know, it's easy if they're not there for you to kind of feel abandoned sometimes. So it's really important, like you were saying, to really reach out, make sure that you touch, you know, the people that you're able to.
I agree with both of these statements. I have witnessed how religious participation is the number one organizational activity for our seniors. So they're not only, it's providing them not only comfort it's also providing them socialization. It's giving them a sense of belonging that is just so vital. And it gives them a sense that they're contributing to something. A woman who recently I helped find a personal care home for, she was a parishioner. She is 94 years old. She is our eldest parishioner, and she was a very vital member of the parish. Actually, our church made a banner in her honor and her late husband's honor, and we dedicated it to them at Pentecost last year. She, just before Palm Sunday, she moved into this personal care home, and some of the ladies were saying, well, every Palm Sunday, the day before Palm Sunday, June would help us turn the palms into crosses. So a bunch of ladies went to the personal care home with palms and had June help them turn the palms into crosses. Another parishioner in our parish, when we have church cleanup day, she can sit at a desk and she can polish silver. There are lots of different things that we can do. We can reach out to our parishioners with cards. The other day, one of the participants in our Cumberland Woods evening prayer service, she turned 90 years old, and she said to me, I said, how was your birthday, Betty? And she said, it was wonderful. She said, I got 36 birthday cards. She said, I didn't know that so many people cared about me. A birthday card is something very easy to send, a thank you note, a get well card, and there is no reason you can't use other seniors to help you fill out, make out those envelopes and send out those cards. Mm-hmm. I think that we have to maintain contact with our homebound.
Yeah, I don't think there's much to add to that. I would just agree with all that. The only thing I would say, I'm hearing impaired myself, so I've struggled today to hear your questions. I wear two hearing aids, and so I'm very sensitive to hearing with the elderly, and a lot of my older clients that I work with have stopped going to church because they can't hear. So that's understandable, even if you've got a PA system. So being aware of that, that's one of the factors in there. So than just visiting them or having times where they can be part of a small group. Sometimes with hearing being difficult in a large church hall where it's noisy, it's not pleasant. So you have to push past that negativity and find a place for them to connect.
I was just thinking, listening to all of you, how this isn't a ministry for the pastor of a church. This is a ministry for a whole church. How everyone can get involved in this, and how in my own life, I lost my grandparents when I was fairly young, and got married recently, and my husband's grandparents are still alive. And how meaningful it has been for me to reconnect to people in that generation. And so I think remembering that this isn't just for the sake of the elderly, it's just not just the elderly that have needs, but that we need them. We need the contributions that come from people of that generation and the wisdom and the experience that they share with us. So thank you so much for being here today, and please do take advantage of the tables. So thank you.